The following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, everybody. It's me, Dr. Steve Pettirudi, here with Shannon. Good morning, Shannon.
Morning.
Yeah, you're back from New York. How'd it go out
there?
I am back.
It was great. 3 days, you know, intense, a lot of brain food. It was good.
So you were there to take in the sights and do some shopping, isn't that it?
I was, yes, from about, what, 7 to 9 p.m., that's about it.
Now, you were there. Actually, Shannon was there studying, getting ready for her board examination, and spent 3 days locked in a room for about 8-9 hours a day. It's what it takes, you know. Yeah, I got to acquire the knowledge in order to help the people. A lot of that knowledge is, well, how much of that knowledge is talking about extending lifespan? Does that come up much?
No, not really.
Yeah,
not
don't. It extending. Seems like that would be kind of one of the core elements of what we do in healthcare. I mean, what is health? Think about that conceptually. Well, good morning, folks. This is the place where intellectual medicine comes to meet public need. We exist for the purpose of advancing the cause of the extended youth and extended lifespan. We're going to talk about many of those elements throughout the show. We do this every week. But first, a heads up. Next week, Shannon, will be one of our most important shows that we've done in a while.
Exciting. What are we doing?
We're going to be highlighting the mammogram controversy.
Excellent.
And it's come to light that up to a third of mammograms are erroneous in their interpretation, and that it is an evolving opinion that mammograms are doing more harm than good, and that we need to apply a more intellectual approach to breast cancer screening than this carpet bombing, everybody gets mammogrammed approach currently in place.
You know, I have to say that's actually one of the things we talked about, and that we can't get questions on the boards because the recommendations are all over the place. No one can agree on anything, on when to start and who does it and how often.
Well, I'm convinced that there's a multi-billion dollar breast cancer industry that has evolved in American healthcare that is sucking dollars out of anxiety, compelling women to get mammograms after mammograms after mammograms, and then they see a shadow and they drive everybody crazy, and then you're getting biopsies. It's crazy, and they're chasing their tail. What we maintain is take it back a step. Let's look at the origins of disease. Let's get down to a cellular level, and let's figure out why. Why in Rhode Island do we have one of the highest per capita cancer rates in the country? Ever wonder why here? We have unique cancers that only happen in Rhode Island. And now the oncologists are aware of this. It's not widely publicized. But here we've got in the middle of, well, this is the most densely populated state in the union, the most densely. And smack dab in the middle of our most densely populated state, they're jamming smokestacks for a power plant. How does this make any sense? They're going to be spewing carcinogens into the air, lead into the air. I'm talking about the power plant that is slated for Burrillville.
Mm-hmm.
And the geniuses in Johnston just struck a deal. This is very, Nick, it's got me bothered. You know, healthcare is more than just doctors handing out penicillin. We're not that kind of a doctor, for one thing.
Right.
Now, I'm recovering from my chest cold, and I vociferously refuse to take antibiotics. You know why, Nick?
I do not know why.
Antibiotics cause harm more often than not. Side effects, allergic reactions, and when you take an antibiotic, your gut takes about a year to restore itself to normal balance. That's how skewed the bacterial balance within that gut can be. And we're now learning more and more about the importance of that to our mental health and other aspects of health. But here, you know, in Rhode Island, we have, what, Slater Mill. Remember Slater Mill, right?
Of course.
And what's Slater Mill famous for? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Well, Nick knows.
Do I?
Yeah. I don't know. Is anybody out there listening that knows? We were the epicenter of the Industrial Revolution during the textile industry.
That's correct, yes.
And that's why so many immigrants came here, was to work in the textile mills. Why did it happen here? Because we have lots of moving water that they used to generate energy to run the textile mills. Well, that water didn't go away, folks. It's still there. It could still be used to generate energy. It just doesn't suit the needs of big oil business, where they can consolidate the power into this ridiculous plant in Burrillville. Folks, you need to rise up against it. When that plant is put in place, people will suffer adverse consequence. Pollution, lung disease, cancer. The problem is this. They blow that crap in the air, and nobody takes responsibility for it. The owners of that plant are going to pocket the money, and 20 years later, when you develop dementia from chronic lead exposure or people are getting cancer, they're not going to be able to tie these two things together. It just makes sense, doesn't it? What's it? They call this a clean-burning power plant. What is that, like a non-smelling fart? What's going on with that? You know what's clean?
It's still there either way, right?
It's still there, baby. I want zero emission. I want them to compete on an even footing. And here's my America now is the number one oil and natural gas producing nation in the world. And what do we get for it, folks? We get nothing. You know, in Alaska, they give you a check every year just for living there. That's your consideration for them schmucking up the environment a little bit. All right, so at least it's a deal. So we go to the mayor of Johnston, a gentleman named Joe Polisina, and the Johnston City Council met in a quick meeting with no debate and voted unanimously to sell water to the power plant in Burrillville. And they did that the same day, practically, that Woonsocket rejected the same petition. It tells you they had this dual negotiation going on. They didn't bother to invite the public to comment. So all you folks at Johnston, they're taking good care of you, right? That's what you need in Johnston. You need more huge diesel trucks bombing through your town, spewing diesel fumes, clogging up your highways, wearing down your roads, shipping water to the Burrillville plant. And you know what you get for that? Yeah, you get bupkis. You're getting nothing. For the a dollar amount that equates to approximately $30 per citizen, you get nothing. Now, if they want to strike that deal, Johnston, have them write the check and send it to you. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
You know, like say, hey, you know what, people of Johnston, we struck this deal with this polluting company up the road. And, you know, you may get some cancer in the end. You may get a little more dementia. But guess what? Every year for the next 18 years, the next 20 years, we're sending you a check for $30. Care of IVE Energy. Well, listen, I don't want to stay too long on this because we do have a very important guest. Dr. Patrick Sullivan will be with us today. At Intellectual Medicine, we believe firmly in the reality of the 120-year lifespan. Now, think about that for a moment. You need to prepare for that if that's what your intent is, right? You want to prepare financially, you want to prepare medically, and you want to prepare aesthetically. As I like to say, you want to live to be 120, but you don't want to look the part. Everything is changing. The way we can maintain our appearance is really revolutionizing the aesthetics of medicine. Our face is critical. Our body is critical. You have a right to feel good in your skin every day when you get up. And nowadays, the technology and the advances exist to maintain that which you love and correct that which you don't. And fortunately, we have right here in Rhode Island some of the very, very best plastic surgeons. And of course, you folks are very fortunate. You have Intellectual Medicine in your backyard. And by the way, our friend Dr. Aslami, she started using the Pederty Method for weight loss up in Massachusetts.
Yep.
What town is she in? Is it Bridgewater?
Oh, I'm
anyhow.
Not. Yeah.
So,
sure.
Absolutely jumping off the page. She had phones ringing in the first week, signed up a ton of patients. I'm very excited about that, folks. It's part of our mission and our passion is to propagate healthy, permanent weight loss treatment. I saw a gentleman in this week, had gastric bypass surgery 5 years ago, lost about 140 pounds.
Wow.
They gained back 100.
Oh, gosh.
And you know what they want to do? More surgery.
What else is there to take out?
What else can we? Let's keep cutting you up. Well, we offered him an alternative. We're going to be following his success as we implement Pederty Method for weight loss, including nutritional behavioral change, medical treatment. Folks, you don't get to be 120 if you're not at your best weight. And likewise, you don't get to be 120 if you don't get the lead out of your system. You know, unfortunately, we may not be able to stop this power plant. We may have to live with its consequence, but it doesn't mean we have to be passive. Testing your body for heavy metal and addressing that can be one way to help neutralize things. Another piece of good news, though, Quonset is expanding, a good citizen in our state. They are adding new jobs, and Gina Raimondo announced a job training position. It's going to be $3.6 million of training funds, mostly from the federal government. That figures out to about $7,000 per job trainee through CCRI and New England Tech. I think that's great.
It is great.
I think it's a good use of funds. I think that kudos belong there. And it doesn't take the UHIP off the front page, though. How am I doing here, Nick? I got about a minute. Well, just, you know, a quick highlight. So we are all now familiar with what's going on with the computer through Department of Health and Human Services. It's been a catastrophe. And now two people from the state have lost their jobs over it. And now they're talking about, hey, you'll get $15 million. If you're $350 million back, that's chump change. Look, Nick, if you bought a computer at Best Buy and it didn't work, what would you do?
I want my money back.
Thank you.
You can have your computer back, but I
right.
want my money back.
I want my money back. Governor Raimondo, I want my money back. This guy, Michael McDonough from Deloitte, sent an email saying, quote, they were well positioned for the 13th September launch. That's the dude from the company that sold us this pile of garbage. You know, they misrepresented it. I think that that's not right.
That comes, too, after two federal government letters to Raimondo saying not to start the program.
All right, but she was being told other information from Deloitte saying it's good to go.
Correct.
Send us your $350 million. You know, it's like you, Nick, this computer's ready to go. You take it home, and it's a lemon. I want the money. I don't want $15 million. That's chump change. Here we go. How about this, Deloitte? Here, give us $350 million. We'll give you this cluster that you've given us, and we'll go back to the old method. That's what I want to see happen. I think it's fraud and misrepresentation for people at Deloitte to have said that this system could work. They should have been saying, we will not allow you, state of Rhode Island, to implement it. It is not ready, period. And they didn't say that. So heads are rolling in the state of Rhode Island. What about Deloitte? Where's our money? Never mind this $15 million chump change. Anyhow, when we come back, we're going to shift gears and be talking with Dr. Patrick Sullivan about breast augmentation surgery, the pros, the cons, the trends in the industry. So stay tuned, folks. I'm Dr. Steve Pettirudi with Shannon and Nick. This is Intellectual Medicine. Yeah, gang. We're back. Dr. Steve Pettirudi, Intellectual Medicine, with Shannon on a beautiful Saturday morning. Hey, Shannon, how are you feeling today?
Great.
You want to talk about breast augmentation today?
I'd love to talk about it.
Well, you know, we've got one of the best in the game, Dr. Patrick Sullivan. We'll get to him in 1 second. And, Pat, I know you're listening. So here are a couple of studies that I was curious about from Psychology Today. They wanted to find out what aspects men found appealing regarding breast size. And there were two theories. One theory was that a man who lacks material security would be drawn to larger breasts, because a large breast is subconsciously emblematic of bounty, of sustenance. And so they put it to the test, and in fact they found out that men who were of lesser means had a tendency to like larger breasts in their women, in their profiles. They also did a study, and they found that men who were hungry and they nutritionally deprived them had a tendency to select that silhouette as well. Then they did another study looking at men who desired children versus those who didn't. And men who desired children had an affinity for larger breasts as well. So rich guys who don't want kids like women with smaller breasts. Now, but think about this for a moment, though, and what's wrong with those studies? Can you pick out the flaw in those studies? Nick, I hope you're listening, too, because this bothered me a little bit as I read these studies. Tell me what's wrong with that study, Shan. You're a feminist. You're an independent woman.
It's telling me that if I don't have big breasts, I'm not going to, you know, get married or have kids.
Well, even go back a step. Why do we care what men think about your breast size?
There you go.
Right? Isn't
very
that
true.
Very sexist?
It really is.
That you're forming your body so that you could be, you know, attract men? You know what these studies tell us? And I know Dr. Sullivan is about to appear on our show and will comment on this as well. It's about the person. It's about your sense of comfort in your skin. It's about your balance, how the clothes look, how you look. Now, interesting, Alibaba, the big online retailer, did studies, and what they found is that women with cup size C or larger make more money than A's and B's. And why would they care? It's the same thing.
Because there's men.
Well, that's
right.
They want to know who to market to, right? You want to know, like, it's a reason why you get those little flyers if you live in zip codes of upper income. They don't send little flyers to the po folk, right? You're not going to get the sale thing.
No.
So I wonder if they now are going to do mailing based upon cup size. But here he is, and we can bring on Patrick now, Nick. Morning, Patrick. How are you?
I'm terrific, Steve. Thank you very much. How are you?
Well, I'm great. And first, let me start by congratulating you on your mention in the New York Times article on the 9th of January, an article by Crystal Martin. She was talking about keeping necks young. And Patrick Sullivan from Rhode Island was featured in the New York Times as one of the authorities on that field. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. That was an interesting story how that all came about, but just really happy to see Rhode Island on the map over and over again for the kind of medical care that you provide, that people provide in the state. It's just wonderful. So thank you.
Yeah, how about that? They're going to be traveling from New York to Rhode Island to get their necks addressed. And you know, we'll have an opportunity in the future to talk about that in more detail. But I know you and I work in concert in many, many ways. And I like to think of ourselves as the medical foundation upon which some of the great things you do are built. And we're talking today about breast augmentation surgery. And you may have heard me talking about the research regarding breast size and what men like. I maintain that the premise that breast size should be speculated as to what men like is intrinsically sexist, and that really it's a function of the woman's own well-being. What's your thought?
Well, first of all, that I think this is really a team effort. I mean, it's so important that people be emotionally stable, that they be physically in great shape and everything before any of this. And that's where you've done so much for the patients that we work on together. And I think that the team effort has been great. In terms of what men think, I think that when people come to me and it's a man-woman couple and the man is the driver of breast augmentation, they don't get surgery in my office. Because it's all about the woman. It's all about what the woman wants, what her desires are, and so that's what I want to hear. I love it when a man comes in and is there and is supportive of his wife or his significant other having surgery, but they can't be driving the show.
Well, that makes sense. Now, do you have women who come to you and say, I need to be more attractive to men? Dr. Sullivan, tell me what they like. How big should I be?
Never.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. We're in a better place. Do you have, of the women who get breast augmentation surgery, and I know you're very artistic at this, and I've seen the results of your work. Our patients have gone to see you, and it's absolutely magnificent, just artistic and balanced. That's a word that comes to my mind. But do you have women who come in with a predetermined notion about what they want in regard to size, and do you have to reorient them?
Well, frequently women come in, you know, if they're going to take the time for a consult, they have some ideas about what they would like. And that's the number one thing that I'm looking for is what does the woman want?
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, can I accomplish this through their kind of physical examination? What are the dimensions of their breast? Are there things that I can do to make them a candidate for breast augmentation surgery? Because now we can take fat. And in fact, a woman from New York came in. She was, her breasts were too narrow. She's in her 20s. Her breasts had never developed. And so we used fat from other parts of her body with stem cells and brought this in and built a new foundation for her breasts. Then 6 months later, she came back from Manhattan, and we did a breast augmentation with silicone implants. We could use a larger size. And it artistically matched beautifully.
So there's a whole platform that had to be created in order for that to succeed.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Otherwise, you have a small breast, a big implant underneath it. It looks like an ice cream cone. And so you're right. The artistic size is, you really have to work out the dimensions so it fits with that person artistically and gives them a beautiful enhancement so they can be more comfortable and confident both in and out of clothes.
Now, do you have women who will come back a year or two later and say, I want to go bigger, you know, my eyes have gotten used to the size? Is that common?
It's not common, but it does happen that people, you know, they may be very cautious in the beginning and then really like how they fit. The other thing is what happens, as you know better than anybody, Steve, is that breasts change over time.
Yeah.
They tend to lose volume, and then people will come in and they've had a few children. They notice the breasts aren't up there like they used to be, and so they want more volume. And that's something where volume and a little lift, I've seen that happen. Yeah.
Hey, Pat, can you stick with us? We're going to take a little commercial break, but I do want to talk about silicone and the medical concerns. And now, folks, from the Seascape News Center, it's Doug Lizette with the news. Good morning, Doug. How are things out
there? News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Hi, everybody. I am back. This is Dr. Steve Pettirudi with Intellectual Medicine. Along with Shannon, we have Dr. Pat Sullivan on the line, one of Rhode Island's foremost, one of the nation's foremost plastic surgeons, people coming from all over the world to benefit from his skill and talent. And we're talking about breast augmentation. And so far, we've highlighted the fact that you've got to have a great foundation to build upon. That is, you don't simply do surgery in the face of other elements of your health and vitality, your muscle structure not being refined. And talking for a moment about the silicone breast implant material, Dr. Sullivan, at one point that was felt to be potentially hazardous. What's your take on that?
Well, there are a lot that came up because people who had collagen vascular diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and various things thought it was associated with their breast implants. And what was done, there were some very good studies that have come out showing that, yes, people that do have breast implants have collagen vascular diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, breast cancer, all those kind of things, but it's in no greater amount than in the rest of the population. So the FDA has come back saying that there's no apparent association with silicone breast implants with these connective tissue diseases, with breast cancer, or with reproductive problems. Other, like the Institute of Medicine, reviewed the material. They came up with the same conclusion. So I think that silicone breast implants have been extraordinary in their ability to help people if they're done properly. They've made some nice improvements, just like so many things have been improved in medicine.
Right.
Implants have as well. So I think they're terrific.
I agree.
Family members, I think they're wonderful.
I agree. And from a primary care perspective, here's the problem, folks. Inevitably, things happen to people. And the women that are getting breast implants, some of those women are in an age bracket where autoimmune diseases are more prevalent. And in our culture, we like to assign blame. The same thing happens, Patrick, with regard to the hormone replacement therapies. There's been concern that maybe testosterone causes heart attacks and strokes. And that's not the case. What is the case is the men and women who seek hormonal repletion oftentimes are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, so there's an underlying predisposition. And the coincidental association sometimes generates a sense of causality, and that's not the case. So I'm pleased that the silicone's back. I remember for a time it was really a shame that women couldn't get silicone because the saline was just not good.
Right. Yeah, the saline proved to have a number of problems with the valves. Actually, the saline does have this whole silicone shell around it, so they're still getting silicone. They just were filled with just salt water. So it was a balloon of salt water. It didn't feel like a breast. It didn't look like a breast. It was really suboptimal. And then so many of them leaked. So we're so fortunate to be able to have these very high-tech devices now that can help women artistically look so much better than they did before and feel much more in proportion and confident.
Confident. And I think that's the key. The Alibaba study correlating cup size to income, there may be relevance to that because it's about personal confidence and comfort in your skin. And I know from taking these histories, many women who were very inhibited to wear certain clothing, and after having a tasteful, balanced augmentation, just life-changing for them. It's so exciting to see that. And folks, if you're listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, well, that's awful. You should just be able to accept what you were born with. I'd ask you to open your minds up to consider that we have the ability to alter some of the features that we may not be most pleased with. And it makes sense to do that. It makes sense to just suspend judgment and give yourself an opportunity to have a conversation with Dr. Sullivan, certainly somebody at his caliber. And I just want to say, do not go overseas for the cheap surgery, right? This is where they go to those medical...
Mexico.
where do they go, Pat, to get surgery cheap?
Well, one of the things, they can just go right here in Rhode Island and in Massachusetts. They can have an oral surgeon, a gynecologist, and an ear, nose, and throat doctor. They don't tell them that's what they are.
Right.
These people in our area are performing breast augmentation. You should see the results that I see. It's so horrific that women fall into this because they're looking for a price point.
Right.
For people to provide them inexpensive surgery. But in the long run, it's so much more expensive because it mutilates their body, and we see it over and over again. You don't have to go to the Dominican Republic to get mutilated.
So there's no regulation regarding who can offer these surgical services. Any doctor who feels reasonably competent can promote him or herself as a breast augmentation surgeon.
They will learn it at a weekend course, and they come back and they start doing it oftentimes in their office, in an office operatory. They're not. I had people come to me in the emergency room. The person who did it didn't have any credentials to do it in a hospital, so they do it in their operatory on the cheap.
Right.
And this person was bleeding to death.
Oh goodness!
So
well,
she didn't die. We were able to get her to the operating room, take care of the bleeding. But it was done by one of these people. They have beautiful advertisements. They have wonderful websites. Beware.
Now, how can they vet out a would-be surgeon? Like you said, the website looks great. They have testimonials invariably. What do they look for?
Yeah, you don't know if the testimonials are valid or not.
Right.
So those are really tough. I would say you need to have a board-certified plastic surgeon, board-certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery. Then, after you know that, the other thing, there are all these bogus boards out there. There's the American Board of Cosmetic Surgery. As long as you can write a check, you can be an oral surgeon, an ENT person. You can be board certified by the American Board of Cosmetic Surgery.
So these are
bogus boards.
These are kind of sham boards that exist just to generate profit for the board originators and give a sense of credibility to the doc.
Exactly.
Well, listen, I'm glad you highlighted that for our listeners. And I'll add one other variable. Talk to your primary care doc. They should know the surgeon that you're going to see. And sometimes they could pick up the phone and they could do another level of vetting. But when you're in the hands of Dr. Pat Sullivan, you have no worries. As always, thank you for being on the show. And I want to leave with one thought. Pat, you do many things well. The thing you do the best is that consultation. That is priceless because I know how thoughtful you are and how honest you are when it comes to assessing your patients. So thanks for all this that you do for Rhode Islanders, and thanks for being on my show.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Such a pleasure to work with you, Steve, Shannon. It's just great to be associated with such an amazing practice. So thank you for what you do for people, hormonal balance, chelation, all these incredible things. So my thanks, and thanks to all of the people in the Northeast that come to you.
Well, that's awesome. We'll talk again, Pat. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Wow, what a great guy. Anyhow, we're talking about breast augmentation, and one of the issues comes up, what about breast imaging after we've had an augmentation? You know, we're going to talk about that in a lot more detail next week because it's worthy of reflecting on when it comes to breast imaging. You know, it's my opinion, Shannon, that if you're trim, fit, a healthy woman, the value of a mammogram diminishes markedly when you can easily access and examine your own breasts. What's your thought at this stage, based upon what you've studied and what they taught you at your course? Was there a consensus that emerged?
A lot of it had to do with family history, risk factors, and really what the person felt. It was it's supposed to be a lot, you know, between your primary care and, you know, are you okay not having the imaging done? Is it something that's going to like haunt you because you don't have it done?
Yeah,
or that way.
We call that the psychology of regret that we'll kind of circle back to. But, you know, Dr. Sullivan was talking about the platform and the hormonal structure. Any surgery that takes place, any surgery is a dramatic insult to your body and comes with it great risk. Risk of blood clots, heart attacks, infections, inadequate recovery. Too often we see the surgery as being the event. I like to think of surgery, you should prepare for that the way the Patriots are preparing for their playoff game tonight. You should have a game plan going in. And that game plan should include optimizing your strength, your power, your energy. And it should include making sure your hormones are replete. If your hormones aren't repleted, your breasts are going to lose their bounce. Your skin is going to sag. So by virtue of putting the hormones back in, you can get restorative value to your entire system. The breasts become more dense when women go on their bioidentical hormone replacement, and that's a good thing. A dense breast is a youthful breast. The radiologists don't like it because it's harder to see, but it's a better anatomical outcome than it is just allowing it to atrophy and kind of wither about. Well, we're going to be coming back for the last segment of the show after we have that nice conversation with Dr. Pat Sullivan. And you know, folks, if you're out there and you want to give us a call, you can do so. What's our phone number here? What's our number here, Nick?
438-9776, 1-800-321-WPRO.
Now, I was told by one of our faithful listeners that sometimes things move so quickly on our show, they like to be able to bring up topics from weeks prior. So I invite you, listeners, if you have something in mind, give us a call and we can take the topic in the direction you want to go in. I'm Dr. Steve Pettirudi with Shannon. This is Intellectual Medicine.
News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Small Business Saturdays with John Laughlin. Tune in to the John Laughlin Show this morning during his new time slot from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Join John as he talks about local retail and small business in our community with Sears Hometown Store in Wakefield at 11. Brought to you by Navigant Credit Union, NavigantCU.org and WPRO.
Well, I'm back. It's Dr. Pettirudi at Intellectual Medicine. Love small businesses, don't we, Shannon? We do, man. I love small businesses. I love they pump money into the economy. And, you know, they do that without getting big tax breaks from the state. They're just out there sweating and trying to make things go. But we got a couple of topics. But first, folks, let me thank you for making our show one of the fastest growing on the radio. And we got our ratings back for the last month, and they were up 20%. So keep telling your friends. It's a great honor to be able to have a conversation with you. Well, next we're going to be talking with Almas from Providence. Almas, you had a question regarding stool testing.
Yes, thank you. Like so many of my friends, I put off having my first colonoscopy as long as I could. I was pretty thrilled to hear that a stool test is available that would, in fact, show polyps that have become cancerous.
Absolutely.
So is that test really for people after you've had a colonoscopy, like to not to supplement it, but to show any growth? How about some of us that have no polyps at all, have to go back
right.
in 10 years? Is that test something we...
Yeah, let me answer that question a couple of ways.
All right.
First, the concern about having a colonoscopy is valid. Mm-hmm. This is an invasive procedure mm-hmm. that requires you to go under general anesthesia, that is to be sedated, requires an uncomfortable prep, and has risks associated with it, including rupture of the colon that can lead to infection. You know, every day in this country, there are over 1,000 complications from colonoscopies. It is such a widely done procedure. Mm-hmm. Now, there are alternatives, and they're having a little trouble getting traction, Almas, partly because the profit margin on colonoscopies is profound.
Mm.
The incentive to do these is overwhelming. And here's why. It's not that doctors are all self-serving and malicious, but everything favors the doctor doing the colonoscopy. Number one, they get paid a lot of money. Number two, their liability goes down because the risk of missing a diagnosis of cancer is significant. And if you say, well, we did the colonoscopy, there's protection. Now, to the issue of the stool testing, the stool testing can do a great job of picking up colon cancer. It does not pick up non-cancerous polyps. So you can make an argument that it's reasonable to do a one-time colonoscopy to see if you have any of those precancerous polyps. After that, if you don't have any of those precancerous polyps, I'd be absolutely comfortable with a Cologuard. Shannon, what do you think of that approach?
I think it works great for people who say, you know, I'm definitely not doing colonoscopy. I think the colonoscopy is, you know, we know the gold standard of detection.
Yep.
I think it could work really well.
So this is an evolving area, Almas. Mm. There is no clear consensus on the best way. I will say this, when it comes to cancer, it's our philosophy at Intellectual Medicine to always start with prevention. and you want to do things that are going to lower your risk of colon cancer, and that includes keeping your body weight at its an ideal level and being mindful of the things we put in our body.
Mm.
So if you opt to just do the Cologuard test or a similar test, they're usually insurance covered. I think that's totally reasonable.
Bravo.
And if you do one colonoscopy, I think that's you're probably good the rest of your life if there are no polyps to speak of. So
fabulous. Thanks so much, Dr. Pederuti.
You're welcome. Next on the line, we have George from Providence. Good morning, George. You're with Dr. Pederuti on Intellectual Medicine.
How are you? I just got the head cold.
Oh, boy. Everybody's got it this week.
Can you suggest the vitamin C flush or Myers or something like that?
Yeah, thanks for the call, George. Head cold or a rhinovirus is going to run anywhere from 7 to 10 days in its duration. And when you have your head cold, you're going to be suffering with congestion. Oftentimes people will say, well, I should get an antibiotic to nip it in the bud. Antibiotics don't treat virus, folks, and they put you at risk. At our center, we have the Flu Fighter. We have an IV known as the Shield. And these are intravenous treatments that have high-dose vitamin C in it. Vitamin C is known to be toxic to virions, that is to viruses, as well as bacteria. And by virtue of taking in a high-dose IV, and we complement that with some immune-boosting supplements.
We do?
Yes, and you put those together, George, and you got a shot at improving the way you feel and shortening the duration of the infection. And the beauty of this approach is you do it without exposure to antibiotics. Antibiotics, folks, are critical and life-saving in some cases, but are profoundly overutilized in our culture. It's almost when you go to see a conventional doc, they don't want to spend the time to think about educating you regarding your alternatives. It's much easier to give you a Z-Pack like a door prize. Have a nice day. I hope you get better. It's part of what Descartes said about medicine. It's amusing the patient while nature affects the cure. So avoid those antibiotics. Come in. What's our number at our center anyhow?
It is 401-921-5934.
And we will be there today. I did want to speak. We had a question off air. How am I doing, Nick? I have time to respond to this. I'll be quick. So the question was, doctor, I had a testosterone level of 450, and they want to give me shots. What do you think? Here's what I think. A testosterone of 450 implies a total testosterone. You need to look at the free testosterone in order to be more diagnostic. Furthermore, the blood level does not dictate the treatment. The treatment is predicated on your symptom. How are you feeling? And are those symptoms associated exclusively with your testosterone? Oftentimes, the thyroid is involved and needs to be managed as well. If you have excess adiposity and you simply inject yourself with testosterone, you will be converting some of that testosterone into estrogen. So there are a lot of elements to balance here. In our practice, we do HCG, which is a way to preserve testicular size. If you go on testosterone injections and you do nothing to protect your testicles, they will wither and you won't feel as good. So I don't base decisions strictly on blood levels. You need to look at the whole picture. You need to look at the intellectual medicine picture. It's another great day to be a Rhode Islander and a great day to be in Southern New England. I'm Dr. Steve Pederuti with Shannon. This is WPRO, the voice of Southern New England. Next up, Tony DeJesus, the Big Blue Bug Solutions. Have a great week, everybody. Maybe.